Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What is Curious Louis? Well, it's something brand new from St. Louis Public Radio, and we'll be telling you more about it in just a couple of moments. But first, a springboard is something that enables someone to jump to a new level, and that's what the Springboard Education Program is and has been in St. Louis for some five decades now. It's Springboard's 50th anniversary. Simply put, it goes beyond the three R's by using the arts, sciences, and humanities to develop critical thinking skills, creativity, collaboration, and communication in young students. We've talked a lot recently about the importance of developing young minds. Springboard is another method of doing just that. Joining me in studio to talk about it from Springboard are Kathy Hartman, its executive director, Anthony D'Agostino, its senior program director, Carol Whittier is a former principal, and a Springboard board member. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Seems like we've been talking a lot in the last couple of weeks on this program about the importance of the young mind and developing it early. I've been so impressed with how important that is. So Springboard is another element in this whole process of getting to young minds. But, Kathy, let me start with you. For those who really are not familiar with Springboard, give me a quick overview of what it is and what it's designed to do.
Well, Springboard is all about helping students succeed. So our primary focus is to work with children who are between the ages of K through eighth grade. And a huge part of what we do is to serve students who are under-resourced. So we take creative programs and place those into schools, programs that may have an emphasis in music or theater or design thinking or in drama, all those areas that help students to then develop a lifelong love of learning and be ignited in their interest of learning.
You have to work, obviously, very closely with the schools, then, that you're involved with. And how many are you involved with, by the way?
We have approximately 140 different schools that we provide programming in.
And they are parochial schools as well as public schools?
It's a variety. So we have private schools as well as public schools, as well as charter schools. We, do the gamut.
And how long do these programs last within the schools? Is it a full year-round program?
Well, it really depends. We have programs that are in three different formats. So we have something called a residency. And that type of program extends over the course of maybe a six-week period. We have other programs called workshops, and those might be just one session, one 45-minute session given to multiple classes. And then finally, we have performances that might just be a one-time program that goes in for, say, a 45 to 60-minute period of time.
And Anthony, who is conducting the classes?
We have teaching partner artists, we call them. These are people in the community that we've found. Some of them are retired teachers from the classroom. A lot of them do part-time work with us mostly. We have about 100 of them that we work with. They go through a vetting process, and they have an expertise usually that they work on, whether it is, like Kathy said, in theater or something dealing with music or dance. And these professionals, we take them and we work with them, putting them in the classroom and doing these programs that we develop and have connected to standards and really get the students engaged.
Right. Carol, you're a former principal, correct?
I am.
Were you working with Springboard during the time that you were principal?
The time that I was principal, when I was a teacher, and I think I may have even gotten some Springboard programming as a kid, 50 years.
50 years, yeah, that does take us back a good long while. Well, one of the things that I'm curious about, and I'll start with you on this, is there's so much emphasis today on teaching the test. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
I wonder, how do you shoehorn in the humanities? It seems the humanities have gotten lost in the curriculum in recent years.
Well, that is a big issue. Yeah. But when you consider what education is really supposed to do, and that's to prepare kids to live in our democracy and to be citizens and to be able to make good choices and all the things that makes a good adult, then you certainly can't just think about testing. And so when we get back talking about Springboard, I think Springboard helps in that area because it's a real-world experience through the arts to get kids to think critically ask good questions, read better. All of those things can happen when you have exciting experiences and not just teaching the test.
Anthony, let me turn to you as the program guy here. Working that into the regular curriculum, it would seem to me, might be a little difficult.
It takes a rethinking of what you're doing and how you approach everything. And what's amazing to me is this whole teaching to the test. It doesn't matter how much you teach the test. If the student doesn't learn and doesn't engage in the find personal meaning, then it's not going to go anywhere. It's dead from the start. So that idea there's a whole saying of having the sage on the stage or the guide on the side. Mm-hmm. And teaching shouldn't be just lecturing and having textbooks and doing this rote learning. It needs to be having students take charge of their learning, and that's what good teachers do. They facilitate that kind of coaching and learning. And so what we're trying to do is take techniques that work, techniques that get the students engaged and want to be involved in that learning that is connected to those Missouri learning standards and all of those important content and skill development areas.
Kathy, it does seem like it would be a lot more fun for the students to not have to worry about the core subjects when they can do the drama and the art and music and those things.
Well, learning should be fun. Mm-hmm. If it's not enjoyable, it's not going to be memorable. If it's not memorable, then it's not going to be something that translates into being beneficial throughout your life. So, while fun isn't our goal is to really increase learning and to help students to succeed by doing better in the standard curriculum. But by the same token, it needs to be a little bit of fun and enjoyable in order for students to really want to tune in and engage in it.
Is there a way to track the success of this program, a way to find out if the young people are actually better off after this exposure or not?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the data that's out there is anecdotal. Uh-huh. I mean, we do hear some incredible anecdotal stories. We also do evaluation. At this point, we're not doing it directly with the students, but we do evaluation with our teaching partner artists and with the teachers and with the administrators to assess the impact that the programs are having on the students.
Hmm. Anthony, you were nodding as I asked that question. Did you want to add something?
We actually do have we've been moving towards that method of having more quantitative analysis and data. And one of our best programs, I would say our best, we've had it for over 20 years now. It's a WiseWrite program, and it's in partnership with the Repertory Theater of St. Louis. And what's amazing is this is a program that goes almost all year long. The students get intensive work with our teaching partner artists. There's two of them in the classroom. And over that time period, from the beginning of the year towards April, when they have a festival to celebrate, they're actually working on creating their own plays. And they actually, through the rep, become official playwrights. And their play becomes published by the Repertory Theater, and then professional actors take those plays and they act them out on stage in front of them at a mm-hmm. festival at the end. And, when you talk about learning being fun, I mean, these kids, you can't stop them from writing. I mean, they are coming in with new ideas. They're changing plot lines. They're talking about character development, theatricality, things that are just amazing and so important to literacy. So they are learning a lot of these skills and content in a major area that they need to know, but they're doing it and they're wanting to do it. So,
Carol, what are some of the kinds of things that you've seen from your vantage point in the school itself?
Wow, I've seen so many wonderful programs. In fact, every year as a principal, even as a teacher, I couldn't wait till the Spring Board catalog came out so I could go into the catalog and find programming that matched the needs of my students. So people always think because it's arts that it's not standards, curriculum, it's not matched to those things, but they are. So you go in the catalog and you find something that your students may be weak in that would be an experience that would help them in that area. So I'm thinking of the radio program. Since we're here on a radio, mm-hmm. There was a radio program that the kids were able to develop and be a participant in. So they had to write the things that they would say, the dialogue, and then they would actually do the radio program, which would be interviewing like you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it was a real world experience, but it honed in on those skills that they needed, like talking and collaborating and writing. And you're talking about excitement. So, you know, not to put books down, books are wonderful and classrooms are wonderful, but a variety of experiences is what I think kids need many times.
It's a real opportunity for them to learn just how mm-hmm. tough a job this radio thing is. I want to point that out. It's not easy, folks. It's not easy. Well, that sounds great. Kathy, you mentioned earlier on talk about working with under-resourced mm-hmm. students. What precisely do you mean by that? I mean, how do you pick them out within a – is it an entire school that you're working with, or students within a given school?
Well, generally we defined under-resourced as children that qualify for free or reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. During our 50-year tenure, we've had a 50-year-long relationship, partnership with the St. Louis Public Schools. And so I'd say over 50% of the children that we serve, you know, last year we served over 55,000 children, and over 50% of those were in St. Louis Public Schools, most of which qualify for free or reduced lunch.
I guess what I'm getting at is the fact that not all schools, not all of the students in schools are under-resourced. They're a mix, I'm sure. How do you differentiate between the two? How do you treat those who are under-resourced as opposed to those who are not?
We don't just serve under-resourced children. We will serve all children. And, we know in some of the more affluent schools that there are still under-resourced children who are there in those schools. Yeah. And so our programs are serving both groups.
And Anthony, how do you approach that? How do you approach these students?
Well, I mean, and unfortunately, even though we're a nonprofit education organization, it comes down to money a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And,
doesn't everything.
And it does. And, we are constantly, and that's part of my job as well, we're constantly looking for opportunities to subsidize this programming. And under-resourced, we talk about Title I schools, free and reduced lunch. These are our words, and we talk about it on a school level and not just a student level oftentimes, because that's when we can get funding to actually go into some of these schools. We are definitely in districts that are not under-resourced by any means. We're out in some districts, out in Rockwood, Ladue, Parkway, doing a little bit of programming out there. But we don't have any resources that can help subsidize that programming to make it cost-effective for budgets.
I guess what I'm getting at with regard to the two groups of students is are the programs different for...
Oh, absolutely not. Okay. No. It would be the same programming that an under-resourced child would receive as one who's not under-resourced.
And Carol, what sort of options do the students themselves have with regard to what they might become involved in? Or is it basically you choose as principal, choose the programs, and that's what they've got? Do they have any options?
No, this is not a dictatorship. But basically, the teachers, I think, and the principal really pick a programming based on the needs of the student and what they're studying at the time, and finding a program that just really supports what's being taught. So, this is just not some willy-nilly stuff. This is a true collaboration between Springboard and the classroom.
There's a synchronous element to this. Okay.
Exactly.
We have to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking about Springboard, which is an early childhood education program in effect in more than 100 schools in the St. Louis area. We'll come back, continue our conversation with my guests, Kathy Hartman, who is executive director of Springboard. Anthony D'Agostino is a senior program director, and Carol Whittier is a former principal who is now a Springboard board member. Back to continue this conversation in a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, if you have experience with Springboard or would like to learn more, we'll be happy to take your calls at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on Springboard, and operation, a project that is in effect in so many public schools and parochial schools and charter schools in our area. My guests, Kathy Hartman, Anthony D'Agostino, and Carol Whittier. Kathy, the subject of funding came up, as it always does in conversations like this. How are you funded?
Well, we have funds through multiple means. We receive public funding through the Regional Arts Commission, the Missouri Arts Council, and the Arts and Education Council. We also do fundraising through some special events. We have one coming up this week, an event that we have at Talbot's, which is a fundraiser where a certain percentage of the dollars spent by patrons will support Springboard.
Thursday.
Yes, on Thursday, December 3rd. We also have an annual gala that we hold this coming year. It will be in April, on April 8th, at Bissinger's Chocolate Factory. So we do that through that type of fundraising, through grant writing. And finally, we have some earned revenue, the dollars that we bring in that the schools are able to contribute to, toward the cost.
All right. We'll put a link to your website on our website, by the way, so people can learn more. I suppose you're looking for people to help. I mean, most organizations do. Is that, in fact, something you need?
Absolutely. We're always looking for people who are interested, who have a heart for the kind of mission that we have in working with children. We have multiple opportunities for people to engage. We have committees. For instance, we have a program committee that allows people to be able to give input and help to work on the actual programming that we provide. We also have involvement through the board. We have involvement, you know, Anthony mentioned the Wise Right program. We use volunteers to help serve as coaches to assist children in getting that play down on paper so that it's ready to be published. And finally, we use individuals who just can go into the classroom and be an extra set of hands to help teaching partner artists to put on a program.
Right. We'll, again, put that link on our website at sdopublicradio.org. If folks would like to become involved, I'm sure they can do it through the website, correct?
Absolutely.
We have a caller from University City who wants to get into this conversation. Let's bring in Chris. Chris, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Yes, my name is Chris. I know Springboard well. I was the husband of a former executive director, and I can't overemphasize how wonderful a program it is. You know, I think that education, just reading books and doing math in classes, while it's essential, has to be reinforced with what I call tactile education. And otherwise, kids who are isolated from that just suffer greatly because they can't relate the experiences they have in reading or math to real world concepts. I have a number of questions. One, what percentage, if any, of Springboard's programs are still 14-week experiences, which is what I was aware of? What percentage of Springboard teachers come from foreign countries, which is what I saw? What percentage of Springboard programs are work with kids under the age of under fourth grade, where there's a critical point at which kids have to be able to use reading to learn? Those are my three questions.
All right. Who would like to?
I can take
Anthony?
Up some of those. I believe the first question was about he talked about how many come from foreign countries. Mm-hmm. And we do have a lot of cultural programming. You know, we have people from Brazil and people from Africa, people who are doing programs and cultural programs, because that's one of our bases of how we started, that are still on our roster. We don't have as many as we used to, but we still are looking for more, and we still have some. He asked about how many were 14-week residencies, which was our initial start in the St. Louis Public Schools. About 50% of our programs are still in that 10 to 14-week period in the St. Louis Public Schools. Once again, almost half of our programming is still in St. Louis Public School by far. We also are very heavily involved in North St. Louis, in the city and county, Hazelwood and some of the other districts. And then I, the third one just?
Fourth grade. He was talking about the fourth.
What percentage are under
fourth grade?
Under fourth grade.
Yeah. Oh, under fourth grade. So our biggest amount of students by far is that intermediate third through fifth grade range. And then second is going to be the students he's talking about, the preschool maybe through two, which is primary. And so we have probably about 25% are in that primary, and then about 50% in that middle intermediate range, and then middle school.
But he also asked about, you know, building those important literacy skills in those younger children. And we are well aware of the importance of that. In fact, when we look at our programs, one of the things that really stands out is that literacy component, and that in, I'd say, the majority of our programs have a thread of literacy that they're hoping to build in as part of the program.
Right. I understand that media literacy is also part of what you're teaching. We've talked about that a lot on this program, but I wonder, and Carol, maybe you can help me here, how do you teach a fourth grader media literacy? To understand, having that critical thinking skill to understand what they're seeing and hearing and judging whether or not it's true or false.
Well, it's giving them that experience to interact and be a part of media. So, and there are all kinds of media, and social media.
Well, that's certainly
a biggie. You would think you don't really need any help. Kids don't need any help. But that actually can be used to reinforce writing and critical thinking and collaboration. You can use various forms of media to reinforce the skills that we're trying to teach children. So I guess it's the real world experiences that we're trying to reinforce.
Yeah, and you have to meet them where they are. We have a program where they start with pictures of actual serial characters that they see on TV, and these kids are in fourth grade, they're seeing it on TV all the time, and getting them to actually start digging down deeper critically into, you know, what is the messaging that's going on here? What are, you know, these characters? Who are they? What, you know, all the differentiation that goes beyond it. It's a great process, and we have some fantastic people who get into media literacy.
There are a couple of other things that I want to get to, but one that has caught my eye I want to be sure to get to, and that is your educational baseball class. I mean, this is St. Louis.
It is, yes.
And I suppose you have to go that way, but what is that all about?
We have a program that we're in the process of developing with the University of Missouri St. Louis, and you know, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that we have this wonderful partnership through an endowed professor as part of the DESLE Collaborative that allows us to access their expertise. So we've been developing a program called The Art of Baseball, and it is meant to take a look at all different aspects of baseball from the speed that a ball travels, you know, when you hit it, to the uniform, to the logo of the team. And then we're doing this in partnership with different affiliates across the nation, and having these kids compare what the data that they collect on their team to some other team in another city. Did I do that? Did I get enough of that right, Anthony?
That was excellent. And I actually got to go see some of the program the other day, and just some of the things they're doing, these kids. It was a intermediate grade level, and they are getting into some deep data that is really interesting, and they're loving it. They keep piling through it. Let me just give you one quick example that I loved is one of the groups that was working. They were working on the cost of a stadium, and they were going through all the costs of all the stadiums and all of the Major League Baseball teams and all the cities, and they had all the data. They had charted it out. They were looking through it, and they were creating an artistic infographic that they were going to create with grass around it and all this stuff. And they were thinking about how to actually portray the data. And through that process, they told me that the most expensive stadium was $1.6 billion, you know, the Yankees recently built. And then they were saying, and I said, well, what's the cheapest? And they said, oh, you know, Cubs Stadium was only about $200,000+. And I said, well, that's a huge difference. And they go, and one of the kids said, well, that was way back in the day, so that was a lot of money back then. And then the other kid said, well, how much money would that be in today's dollars? So they went on their computer and started looking and see if they could actually find the inflation rate to figure out how I mean, and that's just something that they did on their own. I mean, they were just working through the process.
Learning math by figuring out batting averages is a lot better than just learning fractions, I guess.
Exactly.
Carol, how has it changed over the years? You've been, if you don't mind my saying so, you've been at it for a while. How has all of this changed and evolved?
I don't think it's changed a whole lot. It's just technology's changed. Mm-hmm. And so programming has to keep up with the world. So and so there are new things that are being invented. And so Springboard stays up with the new world, the world in which we live today. And that's what I like about Springboard. Now, you see, when I was teaching, social media was not, it was not even, I don't even think we had social media when I was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And then when I was a principal, it still wasn't as big as it is today. So in order to understand children and meet their needs, but also their personal excitement. I mean, you can't do with kids how they taught me 30, 40 years ago, because kids are so fast and quick and technologically literate. Most old folks aren't. So we have to keep up with kids. And so the programming keeps up with what kids desire for today.
A state, I gather from what you're saying, is a state of constant evolution, keeping up with what
exactly with what excites children today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kathy, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up an award that you won recently from the Kennedy folks with regard to dealing with youngsters with disabilities. Tell me about that.
Well, we were awarded a contract with them to enact something called the Very Special Arts, and we'll be providing programming in partnership with the Special School District to put programs into about 27 classrooms in one of the high schools in the Special School District.
That, Anthony, must present special challenges for you and yours.
Yes, and we are very fortunate to have some fantastic, like I said, teaching partner artists who have come aboard and helped do this. Sherry Norfolk is one of them that has some expertise in this area, and so she's kind of helped us take on this project. And, you know, it's the art of story. They are actually going through a week-long process of being able to create, recognize, and then tell their own story, which for some of the students in the special school district, this is a it can be very challenging, but going into this and actually figuring out inference and actually figuring out how to create and use those skills is just amazingly beneficial. And the school district, a special school district with Molly Bolton, they've been very helpful to help us enact this in Northview.
Getting back, and our time is beginning to wind down, but getting back to the people that you work with, volunteers, and the teachers that you have, what about special training, Kathy? I assume there has to be some special training for folks that you're sending into the schools.
Absolutely. We put our teaching partner artists through a rigorous vetting process. So we have two different avenues that we can pursue. One, sometimes individuals will come and they will have their own program that they've created, and we will make sure that we've interviewed them, that we've seen the program in action, that they not only are good at portraying their program, but that they work well with the students. So we go through that kind of process. We make sure that we've done background screening on them. For others that do something like the Art of Baseball, one of our signature programs, then we will bring individuals in, and actually the creators of the curriculum will come in and bring together a group of those individuals who will be doing the teaching, and they'll train them in that process. We also are continually monitoring them through evaluation, making sure that they're still doing what they need to do the way we need them to do it. And we'll go back and revise and make corrections if need be to make sure that the programs are really doing exactly what we want them to do and that the teaching artists are doing it in the way we need them to do it.
I think I read that you have 7 signature programs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what are they?
I'll take it up. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have a program called Idea Builder, Fantastic tactile program for STEM. We have Music Maker.
Science, technology, engineering, and math.
Exactly.
STEM, very important these days.
We have a dance program called Learning to Dance. We have a Music Maker program that has that same type of creation, but through music, kids get to create their own songs. We have a Project Health, which is pretty new and fantastic because of the health issues that we've seen and run into in certain parts of the area, especially zip code related. We also have a program called Science Literature, Science Learning, which really brings cross-cutting concepts. And we have a same person for Art of Baseball, Carrie Lanas, who's helping do that with Wendy Saul. And then I think I named them all.
Museum Maker.
There you go. Very good. Thank you. And that one is getting kids to actually create their own museums with artifacts they find and different things.
Well, it does sound like fun.
Yeah.
I know it can't all be fun, but
like
it does
do
sound
that.
Like fun. Carol, how difficult is it for a school to hook up with Springboard?
It's not difficult.
What does one
we make it quite easy?
How does it work?
Well, we do have the catalogs, and now you can access the catalogs online. And so you just, I think the issue is for the public to know that Springboard exists. And once they find out that this wonderful programming exists, then the information is out there for them to look and see what it is that their particular school and their children would appreciate.
So for educators who are listening now or for parents who think that this would be something good for their school, I guess the thing once again to suggest is they go to your website.
Our website,
and
yes.
And that can begin the process of becoming involved.
Right. And that website is www.springboardstl.org. Want to make sure to get that in so they
know
where to go.
Easy enough to remember. Not everybody has a pencil in hand at the moment, so we'll put that link on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Kathy Hartman, thank you so much for being with us. Kathy is the Executive Director of Springboard. Anthony D'Agostino is the Senior Program Director for Springboard. And staying with the theme, which is Springboard, we have Carol Whittier, former principal and a Springboard board member. Thank you all so much for being with us. Congratulations on what sounds like a great program, and I hope you get a good response from folks learning more about it today.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you all.
Well, coming up, we're going to tell you about Curious Lewis. What is that all about? This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.